Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Let's move now to other news. And the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, has said the government expects a recommendation from medical experts in the coming days on spacing out the intervals between doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines. Minister Donnelly said he sought the advice of the Deputy Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Ronan Glynn, who will be discussing with NIAC whether to extend the interval between the first and second dose from 4 weeks as it currently stands to a longer period of up to 12 weeks. Cliona O'Farrelly, Professor of Comparative Immunology at Trinity College Dublin, and also Linda Bald, Professor of Public Health at the University of Edinburgh, join me on the line now. Good morning to you first, Linda Bald. Thank you very much for joining us. And we're looking here at extending this gap between the first and second doses of the vaccine to 8 or 12 weeks. Do you think that this is a good idea, given what you've seen where you are?
Morning, Claire. Well, obviously, Ireland needs to make its own decision on this and take the advice of local experts. But if we just reflect on the situation in the UK, so when we first approved the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, the dosing was similar to what they had in their trials, around 3 week gap. But then when the Oxford-AstraZeneca vaccine was approved for emergency use, their trial data was a bit different, and they'd had a variable dosing regime. And the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation then made the decision to advise that in the UK, around 12 weeks could be permitted for almost all groups, not all, but almost all. On the basis not only of data from the Oxford-AstraZeneca trial, but also a pragmatic decision to try and spread supply to the largest number of people. And that seems to be going well for us. We've got real world data now, which I'm sure if we've got time, I'm happy to go into in more detail, that does suggest that even after the first dose, there's a good level of protection. And that's directly contributing to the reduced number of people going into hospital and also mortality in the UK. There are a couple of exceptions, cancer patients and others still recommended a shorter dosing regime, but it does seem to be working well. And it does seem to have been the right decision for us.
So Cliona, then, if I can come to you on this, if the international data on the impact of the first dose is so strong, does it make sense, logical sense, to extend the interval now?
Well, Claire, immunologically, it makes complete sense. I mean, the dosing regime is a very inexact science, exactly when the ideal time is to give maximum protection. But the data that's coming out, just as Linda said there, from the UK, from Israel, from America, is demonstrating that there's a really good protection after one. So delaying out the second one, I think, makes complete sense.
However, there may be an issue here with how it is received by the public, given that there have been so many changes to our rollout plan.
Yeah, so that's exactly my two major goals. So immunologically, it makes sense. But I could see that Karina Butler and her team and Brian McCrae and his team are thinking really, really carefully about what this does to communications. And this comes back again to an understanding of the regime that one would use. I can imagine the public saying, look, they told us we had to get our second dose after 4 weeks. Now they're telling us that we can wait till 12 weeks. Do people not know? And the thing is that it's true. We don't actually know which is the perfect regime. The one that was studied and that was recommended in the clinical trial was the 4 week. But now we have additional data to tell us that delaying out to 12 weeks still gives us excellent protection. So it's the old story. We need loads and loads more data, and there is still a lot of unknown. But in terms of, just as Linda says, reducing death rate and hospitalisation, the data is very strong that one dose really does a good job.
And Linda, can you tell us more about that, the impact that vaccination has had on the reduction of cases and hospitalizations in the UK?
Absolutely. So there are really good studies, as you were saying, from Israel and elsewhere, but just focusing on the UK. So a couple of example studies. The first one was called Siren, 40,000 healthcare professionals. But they were 72% were less likely to develop infection after one dose. And then, so that's a really good level of protection, and then rising to 86% after the second dose. And the protection started after 2 weeks. even more importantly, two other studies, one from Public Health England that just looked at those over 80 who developed COVID-19 infection after vaccination were around 40% less likely to be hospital. This is a single dose than someone not vaccinated. And then probably most importantly for me, research by my own colleagues, the EVE2 study, that effectively found that one dose of the vaccine, about 4 weeks after one dose, for those over the age of 80, reduced the risk of hospitalization by 85% for the Pfizer vaccine and 94% actually for the Oxford-AstraZeneca. So overall, an 81% reduction in hospitalization. So these are really, really encouraging results. But just to go back briefly to the previous point about communication, we also had that problem here. People were concerned about the fact that initially the advice had been a three-week gap for the Pfizer vaccine, and then that changed. So I think while the science on this is really strong, thinking about the behavioural aspects and how that's managed in Ireland, I think will be really important.
Okay. Sorry. And Cliona, it's worth explaining then to us how the vaccine manufacturers decide what interval between the doses should be.
This is such an inexact science, Claire. I mean, over my career, I've been involved in making antibodies in several species, mice, rabbits, birds, chickens, and even camelids. And trying to decide to identify what is the ideal time for getting a maximum memory response or antibody response, and let alone and a T cell response, is really complicated. So, and you often don't have enough time or money to study all the variations. So usually what a company does is on the back of past history, they decide on a particular time. So for the clinical trials that have been reported, they decided on a 4 week gap. And just didn't study at an 8 week or a 12 week gap. And it's only now in real world data that we're able to see that having an 8 week or a 12 week gap still provides really excellent protection, because the initial one, the initial dose, just like Linda said, is providing such excellent protection.
Why do we need a second one at all? And you know, people are asking questions about whether, you know, Pfizer, for example, should be two doses. Johnson & Johnson is one. And given the figures, Linda, that you just outlined there, I mean, why are we being asked to take two of these things in the first place?
Well, this is a really important public health message. We don't know about the duration of protection, and it's very important to receive that second dose. This is how these vaccines have been designed, to receive a second dose. So you have extended, so particularly the T cell response, so you've got extended protection, and duration of protection is stronger. We see that actually with all vaccination programs. Just to give you an example from a childhood vaccination, we know that for MMR, which people would be familiar with, 40% who receive one dose are not protected from all three viruses that vaccine is supposed to protect against. And that goes down to 4% who get their second. Now, with the COVID vaccines, obviously there's a huge difference, great protection from the first. But even if we just look at Moderna, which you were talking about, it's about 80% protection after one dose and rises to about 96% after the second. So it's important for duration and more comprehensive, although not perfect, protection that people still come forward for that second dose, even if it's delivered later than might initially have been proposed.
And Cliona, as you look further down the line now, how many further doses do you think we will have to get?
Well, to be perfectly honest, Claire, I anticipate that we're going to need several vaccines over the next years. As you know, the world is a whole set of petri dishes generating different variants of the virus. So I anticipate that we're going to need not only the two doses, if that is what has been recommended for a particular type of vaccine, but we're going to need other vaccines.
And just on variants, Linda, if I can come back to you, one that has been spoken about quite a lot over the course of the last few days is the Indian variant. Now, we're hearing that some cases found in the UK of this variant were not linked to travel. Does that mean there's community transmission of this new variant?
That's correct, Claire. We're looking at this very carefully. I was speaking to my colleagues in India on Friday in Delhi, where one in four cases is positive. They're really overwhelmed, over 200,000 cases a day. The situation in India now is desperately serious. We don't want more of this variant here. We don't know enough about it yet. It's a variant of interest, not a variant of concern, the B1617. But it does look like there is some community transmission in the UK. So this is being studied very carefully, and there probably will potentially be a need for surge testing in those communities to try and get on top of this. We just don't know enough of it at the moment, but over here in the UK, there's still a very live debate about the partial response from the UK government in terms of quarantine and international travel. That's a policy issue. We won't get into it now, but it's very contentious here.
Okay, well, we'll get into it a little bit because there aren't mandatory hotel quarantine requirements for people arriving into the UK from India as of now. Is that correct?
That's correct. They're not on the UK's red list in contrast to, for example, Pakistan and Bangladesh, neighbouring countries. That's right.
Okay. And Boris Johnson was due to visit India next week. I see in the last few minutes that that trip has been cancelled. Do you welcome that decision? Do you think it's a sensible move?
Yes, in general terms, I think any high profile figures travelling to countries that are suffering and really in the middle of a big crisis, in contrast to the UK and Ireland, where, you know, our cases are declining and we're making great progress. I think everybody who's working collaboratively internationally, including those of us in research, we're having to collaborate with our colleagues and have these discussions over Zoom and Teams. And, you know, I think the Prime Minister is going to have to do that in this instance as well. Very sensible.
OK, and that's what he has planned to do. And Cliona, I know you're looking at the Indian variant, looking at all of them and the developments on COVID as a whole. But this Indian variant, from what you know, should we be concerned about it?
Of course we should, but not exclusively. As I say, for as long as the virus is able to circulate in any country in the world, we need to be concerned. And this is why looking at ways at which we can get the technology for other countries to be able to make their own vaccines is really critical. So Ireland should really be pushing on the EU to get the World Trade Organization to sign on a TRIPS waiver, which would allow the intellectual property and the technology to be licensed to other countries so they could make their own vaccines. This has to be a global response, not just national.
Cliona O'Farrelly and Linda Ball, thank you both very much indeed for joining us. I'll be joined after the break by Minister Pascal Donoghue.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.